Okay, so I want to pick up in February the 19th, 1913, and this is volume 11. Are we there? So the heading says that the divine will is opium that puts to sleep what is human in the soul. And one of the things that fascinates me about these writings is that when a thing has been discovered or has just come into public use, Jesus will use the image. And here he's using the image of opium, which really hit the scene early in the 20th century. So Jesus said, Louisa said, continuing in my usual state and having received Holy Communion, my always lovable Jesus told me, my daughter, my will is like opium to the body. Now, what does opium do? Now, it's presumed you're not misusing opium. So if you're using it correctly, it will produce sleep. It'll be almost like an anesthetic. Okay, it'll produce sleep. So he says, my will is like opium to the body. That means to human nature, that human nature has to give way and the divine will actually take over and the divine order actually take over. The poor patients who have to go and undergo an operation, the severing of a leg or an arm, are put to sleep with the opium. So there's a large dose of the opium given as an anesthetic. Yes. Okay. They stopped using opium when they realised the terrible mental effects that it can have on people when it's given in large doses. With it, they will not feel the sharpness of the pain, and after they wake up, they will find themselves with the results of the accomplished operation. If they have not suffered too much, it's all due to the opium. Okay. Now, such is my will. Now, this is the example he's giving of his will. My will is the opium of the soul, which puts to sleep the intelligence, the love of self and self-esteem, all that is human. Now, notice what needs to be put to sleep, the love of self and self-esteem. Now, notice it doesn't really die. And the intelligence, we would say rationalism. Rationalism has become a scourge in the church, that you won't accept anything beyond what your puny intelligence understands. The opium of my will does not allow displeasure, slander, suffering, or a state of interior pains in the soul to penetrate deeply into her. Now, notice the word deeply. It doesn't mean you are inhuman anymore and you are immune to suffering, but the suffering or the problem or the trials is not going to get you down. Is that okay? Because it keeps her as though asleep. Now, beside that, I want to give you Psalm 131. Psalm 131 says, my soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. Now, a weaned child on its mother's lap is completely peaceful and sleeps its head off. But with this, the soul still finds herself with the same effects and the same merits. In other words, what she's doing in the divine will still has the same effects and the same merits. Even more, oh, how much she surpasses them. Just as if she had thoroughly felt the suffering. But there's this difference. The opium for the body has to be purchased and cannot be used often, notice this, or every day. The reason is that it's a very dangerous substance. Okay. And will give rise to hallucinations and all kinds if it's used all the time. And if a person wanted to overuse it, they would become dazed, especially if they had a weak constitution. On the other hand, the opium of my will, I give it out for free. It can be taken at any moment, and the more often the soul takes it, the more light of reason she acquires. Now, people who misunderstand the bit about the intelligence in line two need to connect the fact that your reason grows. God is not unreasonable. God is the source of our reason. Okay. And we know that the more a person grows in union with God, the more their intelligence actually grows. And if she is weak, she acquires divine strength. Okay. So the strength that we need is divine strength. The health that we need is divine health. The life that we need is divine life. So after this, I seemed to see people around me, she said, and I said to Jesus, who are they? And Jesus said, they are the ones whom I entrusted to you some time ago. I commend them to you. Watch over them. I want to form this bond of union between you and them so as to have them always around me. Now, one of the things we have to realize is that nobody goes to heaven alone. And you don't go to hell alone either. All of us bring people we have influenced to heaven with us or to hell with us. Okay. In the second half of the book of Revelation, there is a great image given to us, and it's the image of woman. And as the woman clothed with the sun, she takes everybody to heaven. And the opposite of that is the terrible harlot that takes everybody to hell. And those two images, you either take everybody with you to heaven or hell. And so there are a number of people whom the Lord has assigned to each one of us. He doesn't tell us who they are. Okay. But if you go to radiantlight.org, to Elizabeth Wang's wonderful pictures on Christianity, radiantlight.org.
Radiant Light.
L-I-G-H-T. Radiantlight.org. One of her wonderful pictures of a person in a spiritual life, she shows a man wearing a kind of a priestly cope, and there's a long train on the back of it. And on the train, there are hundreds of people. So this person can find it difficult to go forward because you're bringing all these people behind you. And so one of the reasons why we have difficulties in certain things, like, for example, supposing I had great difficulty in forgiving someone, it's because that's the problem of some of the people behind me. And so I have to do the struggling and the praying and the repenting and all the rest of it until we get victory. And then they all get the grace to forgive the whole lot of them. If I find it extremely difficult to be patient in a particular area, some of the folks leaning on me have that problem. I have to conquer it because I'm the one asked to take these people with me. It's the mystery of our walk with God. You don't go alone. OK, and when we go into the higher volumes, Louisa will be told that everybody who tries to live in the divine will is on her carpet, if I can put it that way. It's on her trail. She's had to carry us all, the whole lot of us, every single one. And so initially he just says, they're the ones I've entrusted to you. Now, she's not told that they are millions. They're already millions, do you know what I mean, around the world living in the divine will. I'm saying millions. I just mean a large number. Okay. Because I don't think anybody has counted them. So I want to form this bond between you and them, okay, so as to have them always around me, okay. So there's an example of, I think it's 2 Corinthians 5:20. We are ambassadors for Christ. We are representing him to others. You'll know the immediate ones if you're married and you have a family and all the rest of it. And he pointed out one in particular to me, Louisa said. I said, ah, Jesus, have you forgotten about my misery and nothingness and the extreme need I have? What can I do? And Jesus said, you will do nothing, because we have to keep remembering that we entered the divine will, and what we want to do, he actually does it. Okay, you desire it, I do it. You remember? Mm-hmm. Just as you've always done nothing, he said to her. I alone will speak and operate within you, and I will speak through your mouth. Now, the thing is, he does that with all of us. Have you ever been spoken to somebody and they asked your advice? As far as you were concerned, you didn't know the answer to the problem. But then you find yourself saying something that actually surprises you. afterwards they tell you that was exactly what they needed. So that's the Lord actually using your voice to speak to them. And it's simply because you're in relationship to him and you're trying to love your neighbour. And so he works through that line of love. Okay. And that's normal. That's ordinary. That's not extraordinary sanctity or anything. If only you want it so, he said, if there's a good disposition in them, I will offer myself for everything. In other words, if you really want it, he said, and if I find a disposition in them to be able to benefit from this, he said, fine, we're all up and running. And even if I should keep you asleep in my will, I will wake you up when necessary and I will let you speak to them. I will delight more in hearing you speak about my will, both in vigil and in sleep. Now notice, and in sleep. If the Lord wants you sleeping, the sleeping is not sterile. If the Lord wants you working, the work is not sterile. But if the Lord wants you sleeping when you're working, then the working is sterile. And if he has you sleeping when you should be working, then the sleeping is sterile. The operative thing is his will, if he wants it. Now, you remember in the early volumes, Louisa had great difficulty when she was no longer experiencing the passion and all of this, and she felt useless and all the rest of it. And Jesus told her, look, it's not the suffering. The suffering only has value if it is my will that you suffer. But if you suffer and it's not my will, it's like beating an animal out in the field. It's no value. Does that make sense? It's very important just sort of get these points. So let's come to March the 16th, 1913. Prayer without fervour. I have a VIP on this one. I don't know if any of you know anything about prayer without fervour. Some of us have a PhD in it. So Louisa said, I will write some little things that Blessed Jesus told me in the past few days. I remember that, though, feeling indifferent and cold, I was doing what I usually do. Now, that's the vital bit, that when you're having difficulty in prayer, that you will continue doing what you normally do, that you won't just stop because it's difficult. And I thought to myself, who knows how much more glory I gave to our Lord when I felt the opposite than I feel today. See, it's nothing to do with feelings. And that's what she's going to be told. And Jesus said, my daughter, when the soul prays with fervour, that means you have lots of feelings. Now, I want you to put number one on this. It is incense with smoke. The smoke are the feelings. On the other hand, when she prays, feeling cold, but without having allowed anything extraneous to me to enter, this is number two. It is incense without smoke. There's nothing of yourself in it. It is pure gift. Is that okay? Terribly important. Both of them are pleasing to me, but the incense without smoke pleases me more because smoke always causes bother to the eyes. I love that, isn't it? So then he goes on to give her what I think is a very, very important message. As I was feeling the same way, she said, Jesus said, my daughter, ice in my will is more ardent than fire. Now, to us, that's a contradiction in terms, isn't it? What would impress you the most? To see that ice has the virtue of burning and destroying anything that might touch it, or to see fire turning things into fire? Certainly the ice, he said. Ah, my daughter, in my will, things change their nature, because to us, ice can't burn. Okay, so it's changing its nature. So, ice in my will has the power of destroying anything that is not worthy of my sanctity. Now, that's one of the reasons why the Lord allows us to have dryness in prayer, so that our motivation is purified and our desires are purified and our prayer is purified as well. So ice in my will has the power of destroying anything that is not worthy of my sanctity and renders the soul pure, clear and holy. Now, when we get up into the higher volumes, you're going to hear that Louisa has become like crystal. That means the light of God can come through, no problem. Now, at an earlier stage, we are opaque. That means the light can't get through. So the Lord has to keep purifying, purifying until the light can get through. So ice in my will has the power of destroying anything that is not worthy of my sanctity and renders the soul pure, clear and holy, according to my liking, not according to her liking. Now, who's the more important of the two? It's him. This is the blindness of creatures and also of those who are said to be good in feeling cold, miserable, weak and oppressed and so on. And the more they feel so-called bad, I love that word bad here because it explains the numerous times that Louisa has said to the Lord, but I feel so bad, you know. At our stage of history, we mightn't use the word bad, but we'd say all kinds of things. I got out of the wrong side of the bed today. Mm. Nothing's working right today, you know. Mm. Things are miserable and blah, blah, blah. We'd have all kinds of way of saying it, but she used the simple word bad. But now you have the the explanation of it here. And the more they feel bad, that is cold, miserable, weak and oppressed, the more they huddle within their will. Now, you see the mistake we make? Mm-hmm. We fall back to ourselves, weaving their own maze with which to wrap themselves even more within their evils instead of making a jump into my will. In other words, getting out of the junk and going straight into the divine will, regardless of how you feel. Isn't that absolutely brilliant? Mm-hmm. In which they would find the coldness, fire, the misery, wealth, the weakness, strength, the oppression, joy. Look at the transformation. Isn't it absolutely incredible? So put an NB about 2 feet tall beside that. That's something you really, really need to take notice of. And so what he's saying is, don't measure your prayer by your feelings. It's not because you're fervent that the prayer has value. The prayer has value if it is done in the will of God, with love, with humility. It has value. So look at this. Jesus said, I make them feel bad, so bad on purpose in order to give them in my will the opposite of the evils they have. How's that? Mm-hmm. Will you put another NB beside that? Mm-hmm. And the next time you want to say you feel so bad, you say, oh, the Lord has allowed this to happen because he wants to give me the opposite. And you jump into the opposite. Isn't that okay? But creatures not wanting to understand this once and for all render vain my designs upon them. This is blindness. This is blindness, he said. Amazing, isn't it? Another time Jesus said, my daughter, take a look at how one who does my will nourishes herself. Now, the heading I have for this is feeding on light. Feeding on light. Operating in the divine will and power. Literally, we feed on light. Okay. So this is a very important message. At that moment, I saw a sun spreading innumerable rays. It was so very bright that our sun seemed to be just a shadow. And a few souls immersed in this light, sucking with their mouths from these rays as if they were breasts. Now, those few souls are people in the divine will. Few by comparison with the sheer numbers on the earth. These souls were estranged from anything else. They've detached themselves from everything that they should be detached from. As if they were doing nothing. So there's brother and sister, nothing. But while it seemed that they were doing nothing, from them came the whole of the divine operating. Okay. So he added, have you seen the happiness of the ones who do my will? And how from them only comes the repetition of my works? Now, the repetition of my works, that should be John 14, and I think it's 7. My disciples will do the same works as I do when I go to the Father. So it's from these ones in the divine will comes the repetition of my works. One who does my will, that means lives in the divine will, nourishes herself with light. Now, God is light, 1 John 1:5. God is light. So we're nourishing ourselves with God. That is with me, Jesus said. And while she does nothing, she actually does everything because we're allowing him to do it in us. So she can be certain that whatever she thinks, does and says is the effect of the food which she takes. That is, everything is the fruit of my will. Now, that's the position we need to be on a daily basis. And for that, I want to give you 2 Corinthians 6:10. As having nothing, we have everything. 2 Corinthians 6:10. Now, March the 21st, I have, hold on a second, 45. So, March the 21st, 1913, the heading is The Abandonment of the Soul in the Divine Will is Opium for Jesus. So it gives him a bit of relief. So continuing in my usual state, I was telling sweet Jesus to condescend to let me share in his pains. And he told me, my daughter, the opium of the soul is my will. My opium, that should be a capital M, is the will of the soul abandoned in my will, united to pure love. Now notice I keep on saying that the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. This opium the soul gives to me has the power of making the thorns lose in me their capacity to prick, the nails to pierce, the wounds to cause pain. It soothes everything for me and puts everything to sleep. So if you've given me opium, how can you want me to let you share my pains, he said. If I do not have them for myself, neither can I give them to you, because you can only give what you have. Now, what Jesus is saying is that living in the divine will is what gives him the comfort he needs, because it's somebody on earth actually benefiting completely from both the creation and redemption and sanctification that was God's plan for us. That's why we comfort him. And Louisa said, ah, Jesus, how good you are at coming up with this. It's his first time to say it to her, by the way. It seems that you want to make fun of me coming up with these terms so as not to make me content. Okay, now watch this. He gives her a very, very important response. No, no, it's true, he said. It really is like this. I need much opium, he said, and I want you so abandoned in me as to no longer feel yourself in such a way that I will no longer recognize you as yourself, but I will only recognize myself in you. And I will say to you that you are my soul, my flesh, my bones. In other words, another little incarnation. Okay. So what he's saying to her is abandonment in the divine will is better than any suffering. Suffering has its own function, but abandonment in the divine will is better than anything else. So you need to put that as a little heading for the paragraph. And if we abandon ourselves to the divine will, you'll no longer either concentrate on yourself or even feel yourself, because you're reaching out altogether in such a way that I no longer recognize you as yourself, but I only recognize myself in you. So this allows Jesus to bilocate himself completely in us. It's wonderful. It's an incredible thing. And during these times, he said, I need much. These times are we're into 1913. and World War One is 14 to 18, isn't it? So the times are really bad. I need much opium because if I wake up, I will pour out deluges of scourges, he said. In other words, there must be some appeasement of the divine justice. Okay. He disappeared then and he came back after a while. Now, I have a heading over this one and there's one word. It's nothingness. My daughter, many times it happens to souls what happens in the air. Because of the stench that emanates from the earth. Now, that stench is the stench of sin and rebellion against God. And it's pretty awful at the moment, isn't it?
Yes.
That emanates from the earth. The air becomes greasy. Isn't that interesting? And one feels such a thick, heavy, oppressive and nauseating air that winds are necessary in order to remove that grease from the air. And then after the air has been purified, the finest breeze blows, such that one would remain with one's mouth open in order to breathe that purified air. All this happens in souls also. Many times, watch this, complacency, self-esteem, ego, and all that is human grease the air of the soul. That's the thick stuff that he can't stomach. And I am forced to send her the wind of coldness, the wind of temptation, aridity or slander, so that these winds may remove the grease from the air of the soul, may purify her and bring her back to her nothingness. Now, you've heard me say over and over again, the only safe place is the nothing. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Then nothingness opens the door to the all. Nothingness is not a negative thing. It's the place where you find everything. Okay, and just to give you something from the gospel, I just can't remember the reference right now. He who humbles himself will be exalted.
Yes.
Okay, so if you just write down he who humbles himself. And they will be exalted. So the nothingness is not a place of negativity, it's a place of openness to God. But it means that you put the ego and the self and everything aside to let God come. So then the nothingness opens the door to the all, to God, and the all makes many fragrant breezes blow, such that with her mouth open she swallows the air and remains all sanctified by it. Okay, so you've actually been given an answer there to problems in prayer. And the problem is the aridity and the difficulty and the coldness and the lack of interest, and you're switched off, or whatever the language that you use. And the Lord says, switch out of that, jump into the divine will, leave all of that, get into the divine will, get into your nothingness, and you're free. Isn't that wonderful? Would that save you a couple of hours counselling? you can do it in a flash. And the awful thing is you'd have to pay the counsellor and they wouldn't give you the answer. Oh dear. So March the 24th, 1913. Jesus is the contentment of contentment. The celestial mother was filled with Jesus through her constant thinking of the passion. Now we're getting a little clue here. Okay. Louisa said, I was feeling a certain discontent because of the privations of Jesus. And then he told me, my daughter, what are you doing? I am the contentment of contentment. Do you remember Jesus giving us the Beatitudes in Matthew's Gospel? Matthew 5, okay. And beatitude is the way people live in heaven. And Jesus said, if you have this approach to life, you will experience beatitude on the earth. But I know very few people who take that literally. Okay. And Jesus says that he is happiness and beatitude for us. Being in you and feeling discontents. You see, Louisa and Jesus are one now. They're in this divine union for a long time. So he can feel her discontents. Okay. I recognize they come from you because they can't come from him. and therefore I do not recognize myself completely in you, because discontents are part of human nature. They're not part of the divine. Mm-hmm. While it is my will that what is human no longer exists in you and only the divine life. So Louisa says, now, if you are close to somebody in a family or a close relationship or anything, you'd know instantly if the other person wasn't in good form, wouldn't you? Yeah. They wouldn't have to tell you anything. You see it in the expression, you see it in the way they walk, they sit, or anything. Well, if we can see it and we're outside of the person, try and imagine what it's like for Jesus if he's living inside of us. He said, look, I feel it more than you do. Would you give us a break? And so he says, jump out of that and get into your beatitude, because that's actually where you're called. But we're so used to crawling out of our holes, do you know what I mean? And having nobody to tell you how to get out of your hole, that it seems sort of unreal in a sense that you can snap out of it. But try it. You'll be amazed. So Louisa added that she was thinking about Blessed Mother, and Jesus said, my daughter, the thought of my passion never escaped my dear mother. And by dint of repeating it, because that's what we do in the hours of the passion, isn't it? Mm. She filled all of herself with me completely. Now, the word completely is the operative word. Because we can fill ourselves with the Lord, but the completely isn't there, is it? The same happens to the soul. By dint of repeating, that's in the hours of the passion, what I suffered, she arrives at filling herself with me. So there he's saying that by doing the hours of the passion reverently and prayerfully in the divine will, that we are making great progress. Okay. So April the 2nd, 1913, the soul who does the will of God is the breath of Jesus. Louisa said, I was all afflicted because of the privations of my sweet Jesus. When Jesus came from behind my shoulders, he placed his hand on my mouth, moved the bed sheets away from me, which were so close as to prevent me from breathing freely. Now notice she wasn't completely, you know, she goes into this stiff thing in prayer. So she obviously wasn't free enough to do it herself. And he moved the bedclothes away from her. Just like you would do for your husband or your wife. They're having a difficulty. You just do it. So Jesus did it. And he said, my daughter, one who does my will is my breath. Now, Genesis 2:7, the breath of God was breathed into man and man became a living being. You have John 20:23. Jesus breathed upon the apostles after the resurrection and they became a living church. Before that, they just hadn't got it, what Jesus was trying to do with them. Now, the other thing I want to say, if you look at me for a minute, the sacred name which the Jewish people will not pronounce is Yahweh. What does that mean? My breath. The Yah is the out-breath and the way is the in-breath. Yah. And the understanding of the people of the Bible was that the human race is breathing in the breath of God in birth and breathing back the breath of God in death. And this cycle is going on a daily basis. Hence, for another one of the 100 reasons, abortion is such a heinous thing, preventing the breath of God to come on the earth. Okay. So Jesus said, one who lives in the divine will is my breath. And since my breath contains all the breaths of everybody, okay, I administer breath to all from within the soul who does my will. And this is why I moved the bed sheets away. I too felt breathing hampered. I think that's lovely. Now, there you've got an illustration of the closeness of this union. What she feels, he feels. And what she has to learn is to feel what he feels. That's harder on our side. It's easier on his side. Okay. So since we allow the breath of God to breathe in us, he says he can breathe out on others because of us. And that means that whether you are aware of it or not, the Lord is affecting people all around you. You might only sit beside them at Mass or meet them in a shop or walking down the street, whatever. He can reach out to them through you, and he doesn't make a fuss about it. He just does it. Louisa said, "Ah, Jesus, what are you saying? Rather, I feel that you've left me and you've forgotten everything and the many promises and so on." Now watch, this time she gets a reaction. He says, "My daughter, don't say this to me, for you offend me and you force me to make you really know what it means for me to leave." Now, this time she got a real smack, didn't she? Yeah. Now, because she's been going on and on about it. You know what I mean? And this time Jesus tells her to cut. In our normal human relationships, that happens as well, doesn't it? Because
yeah.
You'll say to somebody, "Listen, stop. I'm not taking this any longer. I've put up with this long enough." I'm sure you've said that to somebody at some stage. Then he added with an air that was all sweetness, "One who does my will," that is, lives in the divine will, "represents vividly the period of my life upon the earth." In other words, we are letting Jesus continue his incarnation. That's why I call us little tiny incarnations. Okay. "While on the outside I appeared as man, at the same time I was always the beloved son of my dear father. In the same way, the soul who lives in my will has externally the skin of humanity." I love the expression. "While inside there is my person." Now, the other name for that is a living host. Isn't that right? The skin of humanity and the divine presence. So that's a living host. So write that on the side. We have this extraordinary thing. So if the Lord is truly living in me, and I become a living host, of course he can affect everybody around. And he doesn't have to tell me. So, externally the person has the skin of humanity, while inside there is my person, inseparable. Now, union means inseparable, okay? Just like me, in the love and in the will of the Most Holy Trinity, okay? So, the divinity says there is another daughter that we keep upon the earth. For love of her, we sustain the earth, because in everything she stands in for us. So we become one of those people spoken about in Romans 8:19, that the whole of humanity and the whole earth is crying out for these sons of God to show themselves, the ones who will live in the divine will. Okay, so they... The importance of this presence in us, that Jesus bilocates himself into us, and the two of us are living from one will. That's the inseparability. So if I shift out of his will, the union is broken. Okay. So April 10, 1913, the value and effects of the hours of the Passion. Okay. So this is very good to help you to appreciate the hours of the Passion. Jesus said, "My daughter, one who always thinks about my Passion forms a fount within her heart." One who always thinks about my Passion forms a fount within her heart. And the more she thinks about it, the larger this fount becomes. Now, a fount is a spring, a source. Okay. And just as the waters that spring up are waters common to everyone, in the same way, this fount of my Passion, which is formed in her heart, serves for the good of the soul, for my glory, and for the good of all souls. It says creatures here, but I put souls. Okay. Now, for that, I want to give you John 7, 37 to 39. If you come and drink, out of your own heart will flow fountains of living water. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay. So notice the more we do the hours of the Passion, the more this fount is built up in us so that all souls, past, present and future, are affected. So this is a very important message. Louisa said, tell me, my good, what will you give as recompense to those who will do the hours of the Passion in the way you taught them to me? And Jesus said, my daughter, I will look at these hours not as yours, but as done by me. I will give you the same merits as I had, as if I were in the act of suffering my Passion. That's number one. And number two, I'll give you the same effects according to the dispositions of the souls. This is while they are on the earth. But I could not give them a greater reward. Then in heaven, this is number three, I will place these souls in front of me, darting through them with darts of love and of contentment for as many times as they did the hours of the Passion. And they will dart through me. What a sweet enchantment this will be for all the blessed. So first of all, he gives us his own merits and he gives us the same effects as if we were actually there with him on the earth. And then in heaven, it's going to make a big difference as well. So then he added, my love is fire. Now, from the very beginning of the Bible, they speak of God as fire. Do you remember the burning bush? That's Exodus chapter 3. God came to Moses in the burning bush, Exodus 3, 1 to 10. Do you remember on Pentecost, the Holy Spirit came as fire? Okay. And in Hebrews, I think it's 10, 29, I'm guessing now, it says, our God is a consuming fire. Okay. So, my love is fire, he said, but not the material fire which destroys things and reduces them to ashes. My fire vivifies, makes you more alive, and it perfects. Now, the fire of his love actually does the purification inside of us, an interior purification. And if it burns and consumes anything, what it burns is all that is not holy, desires, affections, thoughts, which are not good. So this means that if we are living or trying to live in the divine will, there will be constant, unremitting interior purification going on. Because the problem is we're living ordinary lives. We're not hidden away in monasteries and we're not hermits by ourselves. So we're brushing up against people in everyday life and you've got all the stresses and strains of all of that. So that affects you, okay? So this purification goes on all the time. Now notice the desires, what you want. The affections, what you love. And the thoughts. Now we've been told many times since volumes 1 to 4 that we have to live 2 Corinthians 10:5. That means that every thought is captured and given to Christ. And if you don't know what penance is, try capturing every thought. So, this is the power of my fire, Jesus said, and his fire is love, to burn evil and to give life to good. So if the soul feels no tendency to evil, now put an NB beside that. If the soul feels no tendency to evil within her, she can be certain that my fire is in her. That's 1 John 3, and I think it's verse 5, that someone who is truly in union with God does not sin. So if the soul feels no tendency to evil within her, she can be certain that my fire is in her. But if she feels fire mixed with evil, now evil is worldly stuff and tendencies to rebel. If they're there, then that mixture tells you that the union isn't there. It's much to be doubted whether it was my real fire, because the divine love purifies us more than anything else. And when you go to the hours of the Passion, Jesus explains very well in the hour, one of the hours in Gethsemane, that the biggest passion he had was the passion of love. That is divine love making him pay for everybody. And then he had the passion of sin, and then he had the passion of the Jews. Okay. So, May the 9th, 1913, Jesus and his mother are inseparable, naturally, because both of them are living in the divine will. There's only one will between them. While praying, I was thinking about the moment in which Jesus took leave of his most holy mother to go and suffer his passion. And I said to myself, how is it possible that Jesus could separate from his dear mother and she from him? I'm amazed at Louisa asking the question after all we've studied, but never mind. Jesus said, my daughter, surely there could not be separation between me and my sweet mother. Why? Because they had one will. Do you remember? Both of them are living the divine will. The separation was only apparent. That means it was physical. She and I were fused together, and that's the way we live in the divine will. That's why the Lord says we are inseparable from him, because we're fused. She and I are fused together, and the fusion was such and so great that I remained with her and she came with me. So it can be said there was a sort of bilocation. Notice a sort of. In other words, the word bilocation is there used as an illustration. And this happens also to souls when they are truly united to me. And if while praying they let prayer enter into their souls as life, a sort of fusion and bilocation occurs. Notice a sort of. I bring them with me wherever I am, and I remain in them. So the more we live in the divine will, the more we are traveling with him, because we are wherever the divine will is, and he is with us because the divine will is in both of us. My daughter, you cannot understand well what my beloved mother was for me. In coming upon the earth, I could not be without heaven, because heaven was his normal reality. And my heaven was my mother. Why was his heaven his mother? Because he found the same divine will on earth as he found in heaven. Okay. And therefore he found the same love on earth as he found in heaven. Therefore he could tolerate the earth. There was such electricity running between me and her that not one thought escaped her which she would not draw from my mind. And this drawing from me of word, will, desire, action, step, in sum, everything, formed the sun, the stars, the moon in this heaven, that is, of the Blessed Virgin Mary, together with all possible delights that a soul could give me and that she herself can enjoy. Oh, how I delighted in the heaven of my mother understood. Oh, how I felt cheered and repaid for everything. Even the kisses that my mother gave me enclosed the kiss of all humanity, returning to me the kiss of all people. I felt my sweet mother everywhere. I felt her in my breath, and if it was laboured, she would relieve it. I felt her in my heart, and if it was embittered, she would sweeten it. I felt her in my step, and if it was tired, she would give me vigour and rest. And who can tell you how I felt her in my passion? At each lash, at each thorn, at each wound, at each drop of my blood, I felt her everywhere, carrying out the office of my true mother. Now, you may or may not remember back in volume 2 that Jesus had asked Louisa to be another mother for him on the earth and to do the office of mother on the earth. Okay. We'll talk about this in a minute now. If souls reciprocated me, if they drew everything from me, how many heavens and how many mothers would I not have on the earth? So here Jesus is trying to illustrate for us what it means for us to live in him and for him to live in us, and what it means to be inseparable and fused. Okay, because if I am fused 24/7, 365, then my will is put aside and only his will is dominating. And because only his will is dominating, he's living in me and I'm living in him. Okay, that's where the inseparability comes. I still have free will, I can still come out of it. But you find as you go on more and more and more, your desire to come out of it gets less and less and less. So if you've ever really tasted the divine will, what happens is you go deeper and deeper. There is no other way to go. Okay. And so Jesus was able to explain that when he was separated physically from his Blessed Mother during his ministry on earth and during his passion, that the two of them were absolutely one in what he was doing, because there was only one will, and that she participated in everything. And this is why the church has always called her the Queen of Martyrs, that she was crucified spiritually and he was crucified physically. Okay. So this participation is real, and the church has acknowledged it from the beginning. But if we would take it on board, it's what he wants to do with each one of us on a lesser scale. Because you know all the planets in the sky are not the same size. And all the stars are not the same size. Okay. And all the galaxies are not the same size either. Okay. And notice that he says that with this wonderful communication going on between himself and his mother all the time, and she entering into all his thoughts, words and actions and everything else, that suns, moons and stars and everything were being formed in that heaven, because he's using the happiness of this relationship. He is using the image of heaven, and he'll use it all the time. And there's something there that I haven't fully grasped at all. I only know that many years ago I got a priest who was a professor of biology to give a talk to students that I was involved with, because they were all scientists now, and they're after a couple of months, you know, and they weren't going to go to church because after all they were scientists. So I said to this priest, look, will you blow them out of the water, because it won't take much to blow them out of the water, because I know what they don't know. No, I know that they don't know, and I'm in the same boat. But he was absolutely, absolutely brilliant. And he started saying that the structure of the cell in your finger is the same as the structure of the solar system out there. It's just absolutely brilliant. And he went through all the sciences and came back to this. And he said, now, look, since you didn't even know that, he said, would you, for God's sake, keep in contact with the one who made the stars? Don't prove yourselves complete fools. And it was very interesting. At the end of the talk, I got an amazing number of paper airplanes sent in my direction. And some of them were very good targets, hitting the head. Okay. So this union is really fantastic that's spoken about here. But what you need to do is tease it out yourself on paper. Like, somebody else really can't give it to you. So May the 21st, 1913, is also a very important message. How the true consummation is formed. As I was in my usual state, my beloved Jesus said, my daughter, I want the true consummation in you, that you will truly, genuinely, absolutely give yourself totally without ever stepping back, that you will give yourself completely to allow God to give himself completely to her. So that's the true consummation of the spiritual merit, not an imaginary one. In other words, it's saying beautiful things, but it doesn't happen. But true, though in a simple and feasible way. Number one, suppose that a thought came to you which is not for me. You must destroy it. Now, that's your 2 Corinthians 10:5 again. This is fierce discipline. Well, it is for me anyway. You must destroy it. And you must substitute it with the divine. In this way, you will have formed the consummation of the human thought and acquired the life of the divine thought. In the same way, if the eye wants to look at something that displeases me or does not refer to me, and the soul mortifies herself, she has consumed the human eye and acquired the eye of the divine life. Well, isn't this a wonderful program for Lent? Mm-hmm. Except that you have to do it all the time. Okay. Oh, how I feel these new divine lives, that is the thoughts given to him and the eyes, flowing in me, taking part in everything I do. Now, I appreciate this a little bit because I find that the dress that I see women wearing is so immodest that you can't afford to look up for fear you'd be affected by it. And so the discipline of the eyes, you know, we were taught this donkeys years ago about the discipline of the eyes, but now to survive spiritually you need to do it. And I had a very funny incident recently that I almost bumped into someone because I was right on top of the person before I actually saw legs. I didn't see the rest of it. But I don't think they were impressed, but never mind. So it's the thoughts have to be given to him. The eyes must be mortified as well. He said, and oh, how I feel these new divine lives flowing in me, taking part in everything I do. I love these lives so much that I surrender everything for love of them. Notice everything. Look how generous he is. I surrender everything. These souls are first before me. And if I bless them, through them, others are blessed. Okay. They are the first to be benefited and loved. And through them, others too are benefited and loved. Well, in Mark 10:38, Jesus was asked a question, who's the first in the kingdom of heaven? Now you've got the answer. The people who will pay this price. Okay. So June the 12th, 1913, the effects of fusing oneself in Jesus, very important, okay. So we've got a lot of very important messages tonight. While praying, I was uniting my mind to the mind of Jesus. Now this follows directly from what we've just been reading. I was fusing my eyes to those of Jesus and so with all the rest. With the intention, because the intention is very important, we've had many messages about the importance of the intention, of doing what Jesus did with his mind and with his eyes, with his mouth, with his heart and so forth. So she obviously fused herself in the mind, the eyes, the mouth, the heart, you know, the limbs of Jesus. And as it seemed that the mind of Jesus, his eyes, etc., diffused for the good of all, it seemed that I too would diffuse for the good of all, uniting and identifying myself with Jesus. That's a very simple way of doing it. Now, I thought to myself, what kind of a meditation is this? What prayer? I am no longer good at anything. I'm not even capable of reflecting on something. But while I was thinking of this, Jesus told me, my daughter, what? You're afflicting yourself with this. Instead of afflicting yourself, you should rejoice, because when you used to meditate and many beautiful reflections used to arise in your mind, you would do nothing but take from me, bring this part of my qualities and of my virtues. But now, since the only thing left to you is being able to unite yourself and identify yourself with me, you take the whole of me. Good at nothing as you are, that's John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. With me, you are good at everything. That's Philippians 4:13. I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength. With me, you are good at everything, because with me, you want the good of all. And the mere desiring and wanting good produces a strength in the soul which makes her grow and settles her in the divine life. Now notice the mere wanting it, desiring it and wanting it, because that's the little thing you got in Tony's thing. Mm-hmm. If you desire it, I'll do it. Okay. Then by uniting with me and identifying with me, she unites with my mind, producing many lives of holy thoughts in the minds of creatures. As she unites with my eyes, she produces many lives of holy gazes in creatures. Now, that's language we don't use. Mm. Lives of gazes, okay. And it means that if we fuse ourselves into the mind of Jesus, that he will give the grace for other people to be able to come into holy thoughts, and for other people, when we fuse in the eyes, to come into holy gazes as well. Okay, and in this text it's called lives of thoughts and gazes. If she unites to my heart, to my desires, to my hands, to my steps, to my very heartbeat, she will give a life, that's a divine life, to desires, actions and steps, but holy lives, because I contain the creative power within me, and therefore together with me the soul creates and does whatever I do. Now this is a way in which we can influence the human race hugely without ever lifting a finger, without shifting off your chair. All you've got to do is fuse into the various parts of Jesus and let him give these lives of grace at all these different levels to people all over the world at all time. It's just amazing. And that's why he keeps saying that someone living in the divine will appears to be doing nothing and is in fact doing everything. But you see, people around you will think you're doing nothing as well, because you're just sitting there. Do you know what I mean? And we live in a society where if you're not doing something, you're wasting your time. And so people may even accuse you of wasting your time, which is fine. Okay. I remember somebody saying to me at one stage, "What do you do all day?" And I said, "When I find out, I'll tell you." Because she didn't know about the nothingness. Do you know what I mean? And it's this doing thing, because society out there, if you're not active, they don't understand that you're not externally active, you know. So Jesus said, this union with me, part to part, mind to mind, heart to heart, produces in you, look at this now, in the highest degree, the life of my will and of my love. And the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. So he says, by fusing yourself into Jesus with every part of him, this brings the growth that you're actually looking for. So will you put an amazing NB over this entire passage, will you? That's, it's massively important. And please go over it line by line afterwards to make sure that you catch it. Okay. So it produces in you, in the highest degree, the life of my will and of my love. In this will, the Father is formed. And in this love, the Holy Spirit is formed. And through the operating, the words, the works, the thoughts and everything else that can come from this will and from this love, the Son is formed. And here is the Blessed Trinity formed in souls. Isn't that something else? So if we need to operate, it is indifferent whether, if we, notice the capital W, Blessed Trinity, if we need to operate, it is indifferent whether we operate in the Trinity in heaven or in the Trinity within souls on earth. Now, a person who introduced this whole thing to the church was I don't know whether she's Saint Elizabeth of the Trinity now or Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity. I think she's Saint Elizabeth. She's Carmelite. And her whole spirituality was living with the Trinity. And she used to say to people, I'm already in heaven. Because if you're living with the Blessed Trinity, you're already in heaven. That's what Jesus keeps telling us in these divine will messages. That we're living the life of the beatified on earth. So this is why I keep taking everything else away from you, because what is to happen in you is so great. Be they even good and holy things, to be able to give you the best and the holiest, which is myself, we would say. The text says it is I. Okay. In other words, heaven's highest and heaven's best is what's being offered to us. And I want to be able to make you another Christ as much as it is possible for a creature. I believe you won't lament anymore, will you? Now, one of the things we do know about life is that life offers you good, better and best. And when people reach the good, they get very attached to it. And when you offer them the better, they're not willing to let the good go for the better. If they do manage with great struggle and everything to reach the better, then they're better than the good. And if you offer them the best, they can say absolutely no. It's a terrifying mystery. Mm. It really is a terrifying mystery. And what the Lord is offering us here in the divine will is the best. But there are people out there living the better. They're actually living decent spiritual lives. And so they don't feel the need to go for anything more. It's sad in a way, but that's the way we are. I want to give you Psalm 82, verse 6. that God says you are sons of God. Psalm 82, verse 6. I said you are sons. I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. So that's another Christ. So Louisa said, ah, Jesus, I feel rather that I have become awful bad. She's back to the feelings again. Mm-hmm. And the worst is that I'm unable to find this badness in me, for at least I would do something to cast it away. Now, Jesus has told her endlessly that there's no badness there. Otherwise, she wouldn't be in this relationship, okay? So that's 1 John 3:2, that if you really are living in union with God, you don't sin. And Jesus said, enough, enough. You want to go too far into this thought of yourself. You see the way it's each time she does this, she's going back to herself. And he said, no, 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 stop reflecting on yourself. Think of me, he said, and I will take care of your badness as well. I'm going to leave it there for tonight.